Hello and welcome in.
Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio.
Hello and welcome to Science Mixtape with me, Kyle Major. Atoms and molecules readily interact with the light around them. But under very intense light beams, molecules can be directly manipulated. They can be slowed down and even stopped to allow scientists a greater understanding of the molecules themselves, or to even test some of the biggest questions in physics today. My guest today is Hannah Williams, a researcher at Imperial College who works at the Centre for Cold Matter, looking at ultra-cold molecules. Welcome, Hannah.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you here. Pretty cold today, right? But we're talking super cold. No, so what kind of temperatures are we talking about that you're doing research at?
So today it's about zero outside, 0 degrees Celsius. I'm talking about 50 microkelvin. That's 50 millionths of a degree above absolute zero, which is -273.15 Celsius.
I can't remember. It's either the triple point or the freezing point of water. I can never remember which one it is. Anyway, so we're gonna get into that a bit later. But first, producing today we have Miriam, and we have today's brain teaser. What have we got?
Hello, Science Mixers. So today's brain teaser is, if you were an atom that was expanded to the size of a football pitch and your electrons were whizzing around in the seats, how big would the nucleus be? So A, is it the size of a tangerine? B, the size of a garden pea? Or C, the size of a sand grain? So I'll repeat that one more time. If you were an atom that was expanded to the size of a football pitch and your electrons were whizzing around in the seats, how big would the nucleus be? So A, the size of a tangerine, B, the size of a garden pea, or C, the size of a sand grain. So I'll tweet that out. And if you think you know the answer, then tweet us at Science Mixtape and we'll give you a shout out.
Brilliant. So yeah, get in touch if you know the answer to that one. We're just going to kick things off with your first music choice, Hannah. So the first one you've got is Station Approach by Elbow. Why did you choose this?
So this is a song about taking the train into Manchester, and that's what I used to do. That's where I'm from, so every time I go back home, this is my experience.
So this is Elbow with Station Approach.
I haven't been myself of late.
Normally, lasers are thought to heat up stuff, but lasers can also be used to cool down atoms and molecules. When an atom or molecule absorbs light with a frequency just below the energy needed for a particular electronic transition, it can actually cause the atom or molecule to slow down and as a result be cooled.
Right, so that's a kind of basic overview introduction of what you do, but that's kind of technical in a bit. So let's just start from the beginning. What is it you do, Hannah?
So I trap and cool calcium fluoride molecules down to very low temperatures using laser light and magnetic fields.
Okay, so that sounds really complicated, and it's probably going to take us a while to unpack this. We've got like a proper hardcore physics one this week, which is great. I'm really enjoying that. Right, so first off, you said calcium fluoride. So what is that? Is it just like a block of stuff, or how do you use it?
No, so calcium fluoride can't actually exist in the air. It would react with the oxygen. So we have to...
We're getting some real sound issues here. We're going to swap you around onto another mic and see if that helps. So we got calcium fluoride. Let's try that again. What's calcium fluoride?
So is that better?
That's much better. There we go. Okay, we're having mic issues here.
So... for calcium fluoride, so we start off with a block of calcium that's inside the vacuum chamber, and we fire a really powerful laser at that, and that makes it into, it ionizes it, and you have this really hot plasma of calcium.
Right.
And also inside the vacuum chamber, we actually just have some sulfur hexafluoride, which contains 6 fluorine.
Yeah.
And a sulfur.
So, and this is that really, it's a really heavy gas, right?
Yeah.
So I know that if you breathe in helium and you speak, it gives you a really high squeaky voice. But sulfur hexafluoride, if you breathe it in,
like Darth Vader.
You sound like Darth Vader. It's like Darth Vader gas.
Yeah.
And have you ever tried that?
I have not, no. Someone did try it in front of me.
Oh, that's all right. So you've experienced it. You know kind of what it's like. But right, so you generate this these calcium fluoride molecules, and that's because they can't survive for a very long time, right? They decay, or what happens? Why do you have to generate them in this particular way?
We have to generate them like this because we want to make a beam. We want to have the control over when we make them. They actually can last for a long time in vacuum. But
okay.
They will be traveling quite quickly. So.
All right, so you've generated them, and you generate them, and these are kind of intense lasers, right? So you're generating them, and they're quite hot. But what you're talking about is this is ultra cold atoms and molecules. So you're cooling them down. So how do you get them from the temperatures that you generate them at, which must be quite hot?
10,000 Kelvin.
So that's quite hot, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that's quite hot. So how do you cool them down? What's the first step?
So the first step is we use cold helium. So the helium can get to about 4 Kelvin quite easily in a kind of refrigerator. And the molecules we make in a copper box inside the centre of a vacuum chamber. And in there is also this very cold helium.
Right.
And when the helium and the calcium fluoride bounce off each other, they thermalise. And this brings down the temperature of the calcium fluoride to around the 4 Kelvin of the helium.
Okay, so but that's still not cold enough because you were talking about a thousandth of a degree. So you've got this 4 Kelvin calcium fluoride, and what happens next?
So then it leaves the cell through a hole. It kind of gets pushed out like through a water pistol kind of thing.
Oh, it's just squirting out of this helium box, right? And yeah. you squirt out into a vacuum.
Into a vacuum.
Right, and that means that there's basically no air in there. It's like space.
Yeah, it's like space. There's nothing in there.
Brilliant. Okay, so we now have this stream of these laser-generated molecules coming out of this box.
Yeah.
And now we get to the kind of
To the physics.
Now we get to the interesting physics-y bit. Okay, that was just the beginning. That was the state preparation. What happens now?
So now they're traveling at about 180 meters a second, which if you can't think what that means, it's about the speed of the bullet train in Japan. It's the land speed record for a train, about 180 meters a second.
That's quite fast. Mm.
Yeah, and our vacuum chamber is about 1 meter long, so we have to slow them down in that. It doesn't take them very long to travel this far.
No, it doesn't. So so you have to slow down this very fast stream of molecules, and how are you doing that?
Just with light. So light actually is made up of these little photons.
Right.
And every time one photon hits one molecule, it slows it down a little bit. It slows it down by 1 centimeter per second.
Wow, so not very much.
Not very much, no. So we have to have tens of thousands of collisions with these photons, so you have to have quite a bright laser to do this.
All right, so you were talking before, we were talking off air, about a kind of analogy of what this actually means to slow down a molecule with such a tiny thing. And I was saying it's like stopping a truck by firing loads of ping pong balls at it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like that. And I think you said it was like a
cannonball being slowed down by a water pistol.
Exactly, right. Yeah. So it takes quite a long... I guess you've got a very intense water pistol, so you have to do it within a meter or so.
Yeah, it takes about 10 milliseconds to do this.
Right, okay. So now these things are slowed down, and they slow down to about like walking pace or something like that?
No, they're still pretty fast. They're about 10 meters a second now.
Okay, so that's the speed of the fastest
Usain
sprinter.
Bolt, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you've gone from bullet train to Usain Bolt in a meter. But they would still, that's still traveling quite fast. They'd still just run away. You can't do any useful experiments with if they just shoot off. So how do you do the final step with these molecules?
So the final step, we now use 6 laser beams rather than just one. And we fire the laser beams from all directions, so X, Y, Z axes. And they will confine the molecules. So if the molecule starts going in the direction of plus X, then the minus X laser will push it back to the center, etc.
So in the same way that you were slowing down the molecule by like having a cannonball, firing the water pistol on it, you've now got 6 water pistols, left and right, front and back, up and down.
Yeah, sort of levitating
and it's forcing the cannonball into the middle.
Yeah.
Wow. So, I mean, look, maybe what does this setup look like? Maybe what's some idea of, like, what are we actually thinking about when you're talking about these machines?
So they don't look like an awful lot from the outside. So we have a vacuum chamber, which is about 1.5 metres long, and it's a cylinder, the diameter of about 30 centimetres.
It's just like a big metal can.
Big metal can, yeah, lying on its side.
Right.
And then at one end, it's got a little, like, circular chamber with loads of light coming in, passing in through all of these different windows.
And these are your laser beams that are actually doing the trappings. They're holding the atoms in
yes.
one side. Okay. And I think one of the things that you need to do for the experiment is that you need quite a lot of lasers. So the experiment itself is quite small, but then the rest of the room is taken up with lasers, right?
Yeah, yeah. So we've got a 2 by 2 meter table covered in lasers. I think I have 9.
Oh yeah.
I think I own 9 lasers. I have to look after them all.
So I should say that Hannah actually works in, like, the lab next door to the one that I work in, mm-hmm. and I'm very envious of their lab because they have all of the pretty lasers.
Oh, we do.
It's do you have very... nice colours as well?
Yeah,
I do.
Do you?
Got red, orange, and green.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, it's
almost a rainbow.
So when the BBC comes around and wants to do, like, loads of filming
They're
of, like, physics, they always pick this lab because it's got all the pretty lasers and it looks really great.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of jealous that they always want to go into there. All right, so we've had a very quick tour down the middle of the experimental machine. So I think maybe we need to give people a break and have a listen to your second song. And you've chosen Autumn in New York by Billie Holiday. Why did you choose this?
Oh, because I just spent autumn in New York. I managed to get a scholarship from Imperial to go and work at Columbia University for 2 months.
Nice.
And this song, it's great. I love it.
Brilliant. Well, this is Billie Holiday with Autumn in New York.
Autumn in New York. Why does it seem so inviting? Autumn in New York. It spells the thrill of first nighting. Glittering crowds and shimmering clouds.
Atomic clocks provide one of the most accurate time standards. They work by using the natural oscillations of atoms. You can think of it as a microscopic pendulum of a microscopic grandfather clock.
So that's a little hint into kind of... So we were just talking about the question of... that you always get asked in science when you're doing something. Why? Why would you bother doing this? So we've had a look at the actual experiment, and I have to ask you, Hannah, why? Why do we do this?
Well, we do this... This is a very physics-based experiment. And we do this because there's problems in physics. There's questions that we can't answer currently. So, for example, there's the standard model of particle physics, which is one of the most developed theories in physics, but it's got these holes. So it can describe every single particle, but it can't describe gravity.
Right, so the standard model is this idea that you can classify all the particles into little groups, and they all behave, they have similar behavior, and they behave in the same way, and it describes all the matter we see. Everything is made of everything that's made of electrons and protons, mm-hmm. and then their quarks up and everything. And it also includes three of the four forces. So we haven't quite got gravity involved. And this is normally something that's tested with kind of CERN and that sort of thing, high energy particle physics and stuff. So how are you testing it in these ultra cold molecule environments?
So the internal structure and behavior of a molecule is quite complicated, but it depends on things which would be sensitive to, say, changes in the fine structure constant or changes.
So what's the fine structure constant?
The fine structure constant is one of these. It's a constant in time and space according to the standard model.
Right. Okay. So the standard model, which describes all of these small particles, subatomic particles,
yeah.
has a bunch of
constants which constants. Are required. They're determined by nature.
And they determine the behaviour, how things interact with one another.
Yeah.
And one of these is called the fine structure constant. And that determines how atoms and molecules behave. Mm-hmm. And we think it's constant.
We think it's constant, but there are theories which say that it might not be. And these theories would be able to describe things like why there's not enough antimatter in the universe and might be able to bring in gravity into a theory and things that the standard model can't explain.
But so why there's not? So we had Roberto Trotta on the podcast earlier, and he was talking and giving us this talk about all matter and antimatter. So if you don't know what matter and antimatter is, you should go back and listen to that one, and then you'll be well in the know about the differences between matter and antimatter. But you can actually test these. So he was talking about looking at the formation of stars and things on a massive, universal scale, to test these experiments. But you can actually just test them just by looking at molecules.
Yeah,
and what are the kind of
inside things?
What are the kind of things that you have to measure to be able to do those tests?
So you have to measure like the vibrational structure within the molecule. So if you think you have a molecule, if we just think of a molecule with two atoms, because that's as complicated as we want to go with this, the molecule can vibrate, so the two atoms can shake back and forth from each other.
Right, okay, just like two little balls on a spring.
Yeah, and then if you put a bit more energy, they shake a bit more. But these vibrational levels are quantized, so we can measure the amount of energy taken to go from one to the other.
So this isn't the same. Most people know that the energy of electrons in atoms are kind of they exist in certain shells. They have defined energies.
Yeah,
that's also true for the vibrations.
Yes, the vibrational modes are pretty much the same as that.
So by probing those vibrational modes, you can actually see how the molecule is bonded together, and so measure the fine structure constant, mm-hmm. and get an idea of things that are universal.
So if we were to measure this, the difference between level one and level two, and we saw that this changed over time, then that would tell us that something wasn't constant.
I see. So, I mean, you must be getting quite a lot of, bang for your buck, right, in terms of these experiments. Because experiments like CERN, which are testing these kind of things, cost billions.
Yeah.
But these things just fit into a small lab.
Yeah.
It's quite amazing that you're able to do that. And actually, some of the techniques that you're using that were to trapping these molecules and things are now being used with atoms, not molecules, for clocks. Is that true? How does it apply to something like a clock, which doesn't seem to be at all related to these kind of beams of molecules and atoms?
It's very much the same thing. So in the atom, you measure the, you can pump the atom from one electronic state to another electronic state, and it will decay, and it will have this very, very precise time. And so you can use this as your standard of measure of time, and it's way more precise than any digital clock. And this is how we actually use GPS. They are on the satellites, and they're so well synced up that they can detect differences in gravity between being on the Earth and being on in space.
So this is when people are talking about atomic clocks. This is actually what they're talking about. They're talking about trapped atoms, where you're looking at the vibrations or some other kind of timing mechanism inside the atom to use that as as the pendulum of your clock.
Yeah.
And it needs all of these laser physics and vacuum chambers and techniques to actually make them work, which is why they always look like kind of these tin cans with optical windows and lots of funky coloured lasers shining in.
Yeah.
That's really amazing. So we actually have a little bit of a demonstration, which is auditory for once. So we're not actually going to be describing what we're doing, but something that you actually do in your experiment is you have to measure how fast the atoms are going.
Yes.
So how do you do that?
In order to measure how fast they're going, we have to use this thing called the Doppler shift. So if something's traveling really, really, really quickly, its frequency it emits will be squashed or spread out depending on which direction it's going in. So what we do is we measure.
This is like the standard Doppler effect.
Yeah.
You hear it when you hear an ambulance go past you. It sounds higher when it's coming towards you, and then it goes as it goes past.
Right?
So you're using this same effect. So how do you measure that shift or with the the molecules?
So by using the laser, we can measure the frequency at which the molecule is resonant when it absorbs the light. And by probing it at an angle, we can actually scan the frequency and it'll become resonant at when it's travelling at a velocity that compensates for the Doppler shift.
Okay. So these molecules are moving, but because they're moving, they only absorb light at a different frequency according to, you know,
according to how fast they're moving.
It's almost like if you had a speaker and you wanted to detect an ambulance coming and you can detect the high frequency of it coming, you know that it's traveling at a certain speed just by detecting.
Yeah.
As long as you know
what the frequency should be,
right?
Yeah.
Which you can do by just measuring them when they're stationary.
Yeah.
All right, brilliant. So what we've done is we've actually taken we've taken the data that you have and made a recording of what we think it would sound like as the atoms are slowing down.
Yeah.
So we'll just have a little listen and then you can kind of explain what's happening as we go. Let's see if we can just do it here. So we're getting quite a lot of clicks in there due to the finite resolution of my computation. But here's another little listen. So I guess what we were hearing there is they could hear the sound kind of like getting lower, and it was a bit more like pure, more of a pure tone.
So, yeah.
So how is that related to the speed of the atoms there?
So
molecules. Sorry, I keep saying atoms. They're molecules. You told me off for that. The speed of the molecules.
So when we start out with molecules, I said they are traveling at 180 meters a second, but that's only some of them. That's their peak velocity. They actually have a velocity spread of over 100 meters a second. So that's a big frequency spread. So at the beginning of this clip, we can hear this actually consists of lots of frequencies all at once. And then as they slow down, we also compress their distribution because we're making them colder. So rather than covering 100 meters per second, they're now all squashed within 10 meters per second of each other.
Right. So they start out with lots and lots of different frequencies. And that's why we're hearing lots and lots of different frequencies. It kind of sounds a bit messy. But yeah. Then as it slows down, it comes down to
a single tone is what we're aiming for.
And that's the single tone representing the single frequency, the single speed of the molecules that you're seeing. All right. Wow. Brilliant. So I think it's time for us to move on to your third song. And this is called Fetty Wap.
By Fetty Wap.
By Fetty Wap. Oh, it's God, sorry. You see, rap is really not my forte. Really not. It's called Trap Queen.
The song is called Trap Queen.
The song is called Trap Queen, and it's by Fetty Wap. Why did you choose this one?
Because when I explained to my boyfriend what I do, that I trap molecules, he was like, oh, you're a Trap Queen, and put this on straight away. So
I like it.
I see. Okay, so, all right. So this is basically what you do in a song.
In a song title.
In a song title, okay.
I'm like, hey, what's up, hello? Since you're pretty as soon as you came in the door, I just wanna chill, got a sack for us to roll. Married to the money, introduced her to my stove. Showed her how to whip it, now she remixing for low. She my trap queen, let her hit the bando. We be counting up, watch how far them bands go. We just set a goal, talking about to Lambos. A 56 a gram, 500 grams though. Man, I swear I love her, how she worked the damn pole. Hit the strip club, we be letting bands go. Everybody hate her, we just call them fans though. In love with the money, I ain't never letting go.
A photon is the term given to a packet or quanta of electromagnetic energy. The term is derived from the Greek word phos, meaning light.
Oh, interesting. I can't remember, it was invented a long time ago. We've been talking about a lot of hardcore science in the last few seconds. So I'd like to turn from the actual experiment to something else that you've been spending some time on, Hannah. And that's the underrepresentation of women in physics. So what have you been up to?
Yeah, so I run the postgraduate Women in Physics group at Imperial College, and I organise a lot of social events and coffee with professors in the department, and like trips to go and see talks and debates and things about, kind of focused on women in physics or women in science in general.
So, I mean, in physics specifically, there really aren't that many women. Do you have a kind of idea of what kind of numbers it is? Like how many women are actually in that field?
In undergraduate and postgraduate, it's about 20%, which is pretty much the same as it is in A-level.
Right.
And then it just goes down and down from there on. I can't remember the numbers for professors.
So actually reduces as it goes on.
Yeah, every stage, pretty much, there's a lower proportion of women.
Right. So and so that's why you're kind of trying to promote an environment of people who are at kind of postgrad levels, where they're early stage researchers.
Yeah.
They're still kind of susceptible to leaving the field. So it's nice to try and develop an environment where they can talk to each other. They can, you know, actually feel like they're part of.
It's building a community in such, because I mean, my experience is only at Imperial, but the groups within the department don't have that much mixing, and definitely between departments, not very much. So if you are in a group on your own with 20 or 25 boys, there is a chance that you are not going to come meet girls, and it's nice to, you know, not feel isolated or realize that you're not the only person who feels like that. And
can I ask?
Yeah, so Miriam, you're at Imperial
So like I'm in the plasma group at Imperial as well, and there's only maybe like two or three girls in my group, and you tend to think, oh my gosh, okay, I'm one of very few women in this field, am I good enough for this? And I just wanted to ask, do you feel the same, and how many women are in your group?
So there was three, there's now two.
And how big is the group? How many people?
It's like 40.
Yeah.
So we're very low.
We're the same.
Group. We've got no permanent members of staff.
Yeah.
Who are women.
Yeah.
So this is how why we that, set this up.
Yeah. But has that ever made you think this isn't right for me, or made you feel like you're part of a small group of that shouldn't be there? Or
no, I've never felt like I shouldn't be there. I felt like there should be more people like me there.
Yeah. I think the same.
That's definitely the right way to do it. And so this is like focusing on developing an environment for women who are already in the field, but you're also doing some stuff about just trying to get more girls into STEM, you know, which is a big drive at the moment.
Yeah.
And what kind of stuff are you involved in doing that?
So there's a lot of things going on at the moment aimed at high school girls, getting them into doing STEM-based subjects. So I go to schools and give talks, and I encourage other women within the department to do the same. I'm running a wickathon in a couple of weeks,
Wickathon? What's a wickathon?
So a wickathon is, it's like a marathon for Wikipedia. So you basically create pages and edit pages and put them up onto Wikipedia. So Wikipedia is something like 17% of the pages are for women, but 50% of the population is female. So
I'm surprised that it's that low. And that's across all subjects.
That's just general.
Just
that's not STEM. That's just
politics,
general,
art, everything.
History, life, everything. So,
and that's something we can fix by just writing more articles.
Yeah. So that's what we're trying to do. So we're going to get some sixth formers in. It's actually open to the public.
I think. How can people get involved?
So there will be an Eventbrite. There is an Eventbrite page, but I can get Miriam to tweet out
information about this and
to sign up.
Get involved.
Yeah.
I saw that there's also there's one on Wikipedia. There's like a Wikipedia events page as well. So if people want to go and read up a little bit about the kind of things you're doing. So you have like a pre-prepared list or like a springboard maybe?
For this event, we have a list of women in STEM who should have Wikipedia pages who don't. This is focused on STEM because it's run by Imperial with the IET and the Wellcome Collection. So it's very much a...
What's the IET?
The Institute of Engineering and Technology.
Right, okay. So generally in STEM, trying to get women more represented on the thing, the go-to thing, which is what people generally go to first when you want like a brief introduction to something.
Yeah.
So as, let's get more women on that. We're going to move on to your fourth song, which is Feeling Good. Feeling Good? See, I just... that, and that's the artist. No, no. Feeling Good by Nina Simone. Why did you choose this?
I love Nina Simone. This was one of my favourite songs to dance to. I think it was in my final dance show when I left school. We did a dance to this.
That's a good enough reason. Here it is.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh, 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 ooh. And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea.
The second is defined as the duration of 9,192,631,770 cycles of the radiation produced by the transition between two levels of the cesium-133 atom.
Science.
News.
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 News. Neanderthals' first artists.
Why you should see the Northern Lights this year.
Antidepressants actually work.
Scientists prove that light can stop electrons.
And ants have accident and emergency departments. That's it. All right, that's it. We got ants have accident and emergency departments. That's the one I'm going to start with, okay. Which I thought was pretty fascinating. So this is work by a behavioural ecologist called Eric Frank from the University of Lausanne in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And so he was observing these ants, they're called matabele ants, in sub-Saharan Africa. And he was finding that if he looked at injured ants that were in the column, ants would stop and actually give them help with their injuries. Aww. So they put their mouthpieces over like broken legs or things like yeah. that. And they'd also carry them back to the nest. But it turned out that they actually triaged the ants. So if they were a little bit injured, and that in that being that if they only had like two legs missing, they can actually still be a quite productive member of the colony. And so they would if they have only two legs, they carry them back to the nest. But if they were much more injured, you know, had really, you know, horrible injuries, then they'd leave them. So they were kind of like actually working out whether or not the ants were going to survive, and if they were, they would take them back to the colony, and if they weren't, they would kind of leave them to
die.
That's
so sweet.
Yeah, kind of sweet. And so apparently they find out that if the ants only have minor injuries, they give off these pheromones which are like help me, help me, help me.
Okay.
And then that means that the ants go back. But if they're too heavily injured, they don't do that, so they don't
wow.
carry them back.
Oh my god.
Which is quite amazing. I just think it's amazing that they have such a complicated kind of A&E tactic.
Yeah.
Which is and it's because these ants are not very big colonies, and they don't grow very, they don't have very many new ants each day, so they need to like take care of the ones they have.
Oh,
so
wow.
What have you got, Miriam?
So I'm going to tell you why you should see the Northern Lights this year. So the sun is almost about to enter the solar minimum phase. So that will mean that the Northern Lights will get dimmer in the next 11 years, and they'll occur less frequently over this time. So this is kind of like the last year that you'll be able to see the Northern Lights in their bright stages for the next decade. So the solar minimum is basically a period in the solar cycle where the sun enters a dormant phase. And during this dormant phase, the sun doesn't really emit that much stuff. So basically how the Northern Lights form is the sun emits loads of energetic particles. They then make their way over to Earth. They spiral along the magnetic field lines of the Earth, and then they bombard our atmosphere at the poles. And when these energetic particles from the sun, they hit our atmosphere. They basically excite the molecules in our atmosphere and they give off the pretty colours. So oxygen molecules give off the common green colour, nitrogen gives off blue and violet colours, and then high altitude oxygen gives off red. So if you want to see the northern lights in their bright stages, you have to go see them this year, because next year they're going to get dimmer and occur less frequently. So book your tickets to Sweden or Finland
really,
now.
I really want to go. I'm going to go to Finland in the summer, but it's in the summer.
Yeah.
So it's going to be really light, so you have to get up at, like, you know,
crazy
2 a.m.
Just don't go to bed.
Yeah, yeah. Just, that's much that's easier. Right? Yeah. A beer and northern lights. I'm hoping for that.
Perfect.
But have you guys ever seen them?
No. I'm so sad, but I really want to see them.
Do it now, because the sun's going into a minimum. Come on. All right, so Hannah, you were mentioning that they think the first artists were not actually humans. What was this?
Yeah, I saw this yesterday. They found out that art that they assumed to be done by early humans was actually done by Neanderthals, which are not humans.
That is so good. So we're saying that this was some caves in Spain.
Yeah.
There was a few caves, and they basically had paintings. There were paintings on the walls, and then on top of the paintings, there are kind of calcite, you know, stalactites, basically, very tiny ones that grow on top of it. And so by looking at the formation of those calcite crusts, they were able to determine how long ago it was that the underlying paint was actually deposited.
Yeah. And that was way before early humans reached Europe.
All right, yeah, because the Neanderthals came out of Africa before modern humans.
Yeah.
So they were in Europe, and they were able to survive, but we hadn't quite reached there yet.
Yeah, but this is the only species other than humans to have, like, creative expression. That's why this is such an interesting thing.
Yeah, it's really good. Although I'm not sure about that, because I remember there was a. Well, I'm not sure if it's creative expression, but there's an example of, like, chimpanzees where there was one female in one family group who would wear, like, a blade of grass tucked around her ear. And after a while, the other chimpanzees kind of liked it.
Yeah.
And so they started doing it too.
Oh,
and
wow.
So it was kind of like a fashion.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't know they had fashion sense.
Yeah, so, like, chimpanzees have a fashion sense.
Oh, wow.
Which is amazing. So the other news that I saw is that antidepressants actually work. So this is a huge study. Mm. It was done from a big international group, and they were taking lots of different antidepressants all across, looking at a lot of studies, kind of pulling everything together. And they found that antidepressants are an effective tool for depression, because it's been quite controversial for a long time. People thinking that actually there was a very large... Oh, gosh, I can't even remember what the effect is now. Placebo effect. That's the one. Oh, I was nearly there. And so maybe actually they weren't really that effective. But they found that some of them are very effective. Apparently, amitriptyline was the one of the most effective drug, and it was the sixth best tolerated. So it didn't have people have side effects, it didn't have people want to drop out. The most famous antidepressant is obviously Prozac, and that's now called fluoxetine because it's out of patent. And that was one of the least effective, but it was actually the best tolerated. So people are quite, like, it doesn't have too many bad side effects. So actually, people are willing to stay on it for a lot longer. So it can be more effective in terms of that.
It's good to hear. Yeah.
So it's really, you know, something that was been controversial for a long time, and this is now a kind of a big stamp saying that actually that they do work. It's a good thing. What else do you have, Miriam?
So, keeping to the laser theme of today's show, there's a team of scientists actually led by researchers from Imperial, and they've proven that electrons can actually be stopped in their tracks solely with the use of light. So normally when electrons are hit by photons, so these are packets of light, the electrons get a little boost of energy. But now imagine that the electron is moving super, super fast and the light is very, very intense. So in this scenario, something completely different happens. The electrons vibrate so violently in the presence of this really intense light beam, so much so that they radiate lots of energy and actually slow down. And this process is known as the radiation reaction. So the scientists actually used one of the most powerful lasers in the world. It's located near Oxford. They they use this laser to shoot an electron beam, and they manage to see this reaction. So they actually slow down electrons just using laser light. So how cool is that? And radiation reactions are of particular interest because they are thought to occur around black holes. So this research could actually help us in the future to find out more about black holes, one of the most mysterious objects in our cosmos.
That's pretty good. Is it like a... I'm just mentioning this because I want to say the word because it's one of the best words in physics. Reverse Bremsstrahlen.
I think so.
Which is like, it's like the radiation that's generated when...
Can you say that word one more time?
No. I gave it a good shot. I thought I was nearly there, so we're going to leave it at that. Okay, let's move on to your next song. So you've chosen an interesting one.
Uh-huh.
This is Serge Gainsbourg with Comic Strip. Why did you choose this?
I'm a fan of French music and the French language, and this song is hilarious.
Here we go.
Viens, petite fille, dans mon comic strip. Viens faire des bulles, viens faire des...
Oui, des... Clip, crop,
des...
Bang,
des...
Bang,
et des...
Zip, chibam, pow, blop, wheel.
Je distribue les swings et les uppercuts, ça fait... Ça fait, et ça fait, ou bien, ou parfois même, viens petite fille dans mon comic strip, viens faire des bulles, viens faire des,
clip, crack,
des, et des,
zip, shabam, pow, blop.
Using lasers to cool atoms was first proposed in 1975 by taking advantage of the Doppler effect, where light appears to be a different colour depending on the observer's velocity.
So we've had a little chat about that. We've spoken through your experiment. We got inside the chamber, and then we had a little talk about the applications. And this is it. Apparently the first one was in 1975, but we're now in the present with molecules. What's the kind of next step for these experiments?
So... The next step is we really want to just get them colder because they sound cold, but they're still, we could do with another order of magnitude or two.
Okay.
And to do that, we're hoping to combine them with atoms, which you can already make colder more easily, and then use the atoms to thermalize the molecules and bring the temperatures even lower. And then we can start doing our measurements.
Right. So this is in the same way that you were using the helium gas initially,
yeah,
to kind of like thermalize with the... That was at 4 Kelvin. These are obviously much, much colder.
Yeah.
So you make a really, really cold cloud of atoms.
Yeah.
And that acts as a refrigerator for your molecules.
Yeah, it's like the milk in the coffee.
Ah, there we go. Milk, like the milk in the coffee. And so you're also doing a lot of stuff about getting the women to science. How can people find out more about that? We mentioned there was the Wickathon.
The Wickathon.
Do you know when that's happening? When people can...
The 7th of March.
7th of March. And you can find out on Eventbrite or looking on...
Or looking on the Twitter.
Looking on the Twitter. Yes. The Twitter. Looking on Wikipedia. That's also good. I think we're going to go back to our brain teaser we had at the top of the show. Miriam, what have
yes.
we got?
So I'll remind you what the brain teaser was. So if you were an atom that was expanded to the size of a football pitch and your electrons were whizzing around in their seats, how big would the nucleus be? So I put out a poll on Twitter and I said, is it the size of a tangerine? Is it the size of a garden pea? Or is it the size of a sand grain? So 60% of the votes actually said it was the size of a sand grain. But it is actually the size of a garden pea in a football stadium.
That's not normally the case. Normally it's much smaller than you think. But actually garden pea is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, brilliant. There we go. You learn something every day. So thanks for joining us for this edition of Science Mixtape. Our producer today has been Miriam, and we've been joined by Hannah Williams, choosing the tunes and educating us about ultra-cold molecules. So if you want to listen to any more episodes, they're all available through all the usual podcast providers. You can, of course, get in touch on @ScienceMixtape. Why not let us know where you like enjoying the podcast? The bath, the ski slopes, something like that. It'd be interesting to know. And let us know who you want to hear from in the world of science. We can get in touch with people and get them on, find out their song choices. We're going to finish up with Hannah's final song here, which is Work by Rihanna. I mean, need I ask why?
Well, I mean, it's a great song, but it got me through some days in the lab. It's a good song to dance around to when things aren't working.
Well, here you go. Have a dance. Thank you and goodbye. Thank you.
have to work, 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 work. You see me do me dirt, 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 dirt. And tell me about that work, 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 work. When you walk a line, 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 line. I'm in the cafe, my ta, 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 ta. Drawing me a dessert. No time to have you lurking. You make a walk, now you don't like it. You know I dealt with you the nicest. Nobody touched me in the right. Nobody text me in a crisis. I believed all of your dreams are the real. You took my heart, all my keys, and my vision. You took my.